Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us. This is Robert Weissman. I'm the president of Public Citizen. This is the news to give you a public interest reaction to the horrible Supreme Court decision today in Citizens United, the Federal Election Commission. We have on the call three experts who will be joining me. Scott Nelson, who works with us at Public Citizen at our litigation group and was one of the legal team, part of the legal team that represented the four opponents and former lawmakers who had, were the lead sponsors of McCain-Feingold legislation. Lisa Gilbert, who's a democracy advocate with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, and John Bonifaz, who's legal director of Voter Action. For what we'll do is I'll sort of a brief opening. We'll give three minutes remarks for you, and then we'll be available for questions. Before we get going, let me just say, first, if you're a reporter who has just joined, if you could email your contact information to Angela Bradbury, A. Bradbury, B-R-A-D-B-E-R-Y, at citizen.org. And second, if you haven't already, please mute your phone. Want to be able to, you, whatever you say will be heard by everybody else on here. We've got some radio folks recording. And we will, after the opening comments from the panelists, be available for your questions. Today is a day to shed a tear for our democracy. In the case of Citizens United v. FEC, the Supreme Court has ruled that for-profit corporations have a First Amendment right to make unlimited amounts of expenditures from their own treasury to influence the outcome of elections. This is an invitation to Exxon, Goldman Sachs, Pfizer, and the rest of the Fortune 500 to pour money into our election process, undermine our democracy, and direct policymaking in ways that they favor. It is an invitation they are sure to accept. To read the majority decision in Citizens United, I believe it's the Supreme Court unfamiliar with our country and our political landscape. They have buried in their heads in the sand about the most basic and obvious facts about the way our political system works, and instead adopted an imaginary, academically perhaps, scenario where corporations have no rights different than real people, no powers different than real people, afforded the same rights as real people. Decision has to be mitigated and eventually overturned. Public Citizen. At Public Citizen, we are renewing our efforts in support of public financing federal elections. We are going to be supporting a range of legislative proposals to try to mitigate the decision that we will talk about on this call. Those efforts won't be enough to undo this decision. Short of the court reversing itself, the only way to undo this decision is with a constitutional amendment, and we with colleagues are today calling for a constitutional amendment clarifying that the First Amendment does not give rights to for-profit corporations. For-profit corporations should not have the ability to dominate our political process under some misreading of the amendment. We are launching a petition campaign today, available at citizen.org or don'tgetold.org. People can sign up and endorse the call for constitutional amendment. We'll be hearing today from Scott Nelson, Republican Citizen Attorney, and John Bonifaz. Scott, if you can go ahead.
All right. I'm Scott Nelson. I'm an attorney at Public Citizen and one of the legal team who submitted briefs to the Supreme Court on behalf of Senators McCain and Feingold and former Representatives Shays and Meehan. Today, the court has issued a decision that goes out of its way to rule in an exceptionally broad manner. The court goes out of its way to avoid any narrow basis for its ruling, rejects all possible ways of resolving the case short of reaching the broadest possible affirmation of the rights of corporations to speak in the political process. And as Justice Stevens, I think, aptly says, the decision is based on the conceit that corporations must be treated identically to natural persons in the political sphere. And by resting on the First Amendment, the court has essentially made it impossible for legislation to limit the ability of a corporation to spend unlimited amounts to advocate the election of political candidates. So the consequence of the decision will be that corporations, and I think it's fair to say also unions, as well as other associations, will have the ability to pour unlimited funds into electoral advocacy alongside of the advocacy of candidates themselves and their political committees and political parties. I will say that there's one aspect of the decision didn't go quite as far as the foes of campaign finance reform would have hoped, and that is the aspect that upholds disclosure and disclaimer requirements. But essentially what the court says is that as long as you tell where the source of the funding is, you can, if you're a corporation, spend unlimited amounts to influence voters in elections. And it really prevents not only the enforcement of the BICRA, the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act limits on what are called electioneering communications, but also the much more long-standing prohibition on expenditures to influence elections by corporations that has been in place since 1946 on the federal level. And it also overturns laws in approximately 24 states that similarly restrict corporate electioneering. So the bottom line is, and it's an extremely broad ruling. The court brought this question into the case when the plaintiffs themselves had not even raised it, and the result is that our campaign finance system now is really in tatters, because any limits on contributions to parties and candidates is effectively rendered meaningless by the fact that corporations can simply express their support for candidates by so-called independent spending that mirrors the candidate's own message and poses all the same threats of corruption that unlimited contributions would pose.
Thanks very much, Scott. We'll hear now from Lisa Gilbert with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, and she'll talk about some legislative remedies for today's decision.
Right, thanks so much. As we all know, today the Supreme Court made a truly radical decision. The increased corporate money in our election system, which will result from this opinion, will diminish the public voice and will certainly further diminish the public trust in the ability of officials to make unbiased decisions. However, today's court decision has left us room to enact new restrictions to prevent corporate money from overwhelming the system. And so we are working with congressional leadership and the White House to move quickly and enact a legislative fix to the problems created by the court today. Now, in addition to the constitutional amendment solution, which others will speak to in a bit, other solutions could include some type of legislation to reinstate portions of the corporate ban. It could include giving shareholders a say over corporate spending in elections, include passing the Fair Elections Now Act to create a system of small donor-focused public funding, or all of the above. And again, we're working closely with Representative Van Hollen and Senator Schumer to push the option which will have the best chance of passing. So I'll be speaking quickly about two of the reforms, the Shareholder Accountability Fix and the Fair Elections Now Act. So as Scott said, the court has proclaimed with this decision that corporations have the same rights as individuals to spend money on independent expenditure ads for or against candidates. However, decisions to use corporate treasury funds for political activity are currently made by corporate boards and executives, often without the knowledge or consent of their shareholders. Now, with the decrease in regulation that this decision implies, the amount of money that corporations can pull from their treasuries to do these activities will increase exponentially. And so we believe that the shareholders and the public have the right to know how corporations are spending their money to influence politics. And the shareholder legislation that we're proposing would require the express approval of the majority of a corporation's individual public shareholders prior to making political contributions or expenditures. We feel this will help establish the necessary accountability for the increased corporate spending that the courts have made a reality with this ruling. Now, the other solution I'd like to discuss is the Fair Elections Now Act. It is a smart fix to the increase of corporate money we're going to see in the system, as well as just a common sense reform. The bill provides substantial funding to qualified candidates who participate in the system by leveraging small donations with matching public funds, and candidly is one of the only ways that a candidate could realistically quickly counter the massive increase in spending from corporate entities, which we'll probably see following this opinion. In addition, it's just an effective means of ensuring that candidates not funded by special interests can compete with equal footing, despite the increased spending. We think it's a smart reform for our elections, as it would allow candidates for Congress to run for office without relying on large contributions and big money bundlers. Fair elections would free members from constant fundraising in order to focus on what people in their communities actually want. There's currently widespread support for this reform in and of itself. The bill has 126 co-sponsors in the House, and with the need for a fix to the Citizens United decision, I anticipate there'll be even more support. The opinion issued today, bottom line, necessitates a strong reaction. So whichever fix we move towards, the reform community, the leadership in both chambers, and the White House are all prepared to work together to ensure the voices of corporate interests are not further elevated above those of regular constituents.
We'll be hearing next from John Bonifaz of Voter Action.
Thanks, Rob. We are launching at Voter Action with Public Citizen, the Center for Corporate Policy, and the American Independent Business Alliance a new campaign today in light of the Supreme Court's ruling in Citizens United v. FEC, a campaign to reclaim our First Amendment and restore it to its original purpose, protect people, not corporations. Free speech rights for people, not corporations, and in wrongly assigning First Amendment protections to corporations, the Supreme Court has now unleashed a torrent of corporate money in our political process, unmatched by any campaign expenditure totals in U.S. history. And what's critical here is that this decision is now really the extreme conclusion of the Supreme Court's movement in recent time to have corporations be treated as persons under the First Amendment when the framers never intended that. And so what we've seen in recent time is the Supreme Court misusing the First Amendment, corporations misusing the First Amendment to invade and invalidate democratically enacted reforms from elections to health care, from financial reform to climate change, environmental protection, and more. And now we have this extreme conclusion in which our political speech rights will be drowned out by treating corporations as people under the First Amendment. So our new campaign is via a new website, www.freespeechforpeople.org, and at the Free Speech for People site, there's a new campaign video, which includes Congresswoman Donna joining this call for a constitutional amendment to reclaim the First Amendment and restore it to its original purpose. We're proud to be working alongside other organizations as represented on this call, but also with activists and citizens across the country who care deeply that we must return to core principles of the First Amendment and that this Supreme Court has gone far beyond where that First Amendment, those First Amendment principles should be and has completely turned it on its head. And we are focused on the fact that the only ultimately way to respond to this is via an amendment in addition to the legislative solutions outlined, because unless the court is going to revisit this decision, that amendment is critical for ensuring that corporations no longer be treated as persons with free speech rights.
Thanks very much, John. Sorry for the feedback, everyone. I just want to reiterate, this is Robert Weitzman from Public Citizen. The scale and scope of this decision and the radicalness of what the Supreme Court has done today, completely unrooted in precedent, the origins of First Amendment jurisprudence, has required that we have a multifaceted response. So we and others are going to be working as hard as possible on the agenda that Lisa has outlined for shareholder protection and especially for a public financing system. But by themselves, they will not be enough to undo what the court has done today. The only way to undo this short of the court reversing itself constitutional amendment, and as John has said, we and others are calling for that. Our this petition campaign that many groups are now launching that will gain much speed in the days and weeks ahead. People can sign up for that, among other places, at citizen.org and don'tgetrolled.org. And with that, we'd be quite happy to take your questions. Please give us your name and state your question.
I have a question. My name's Eliza Newland Carney from National Journal. The comment was made that at least the disclosure provision still stands. This is Scott Nelson. But Scott, aren't there some disclosure challenges in the pipeline, and how might those make the existing disclosure regime vulnerable to additional challenge?
Well, there are indeed disclosure challenges in the pipeline, including one aspect of a case currently pending in the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit called Speech Now, where one of the claims made is that the disclosure requirements imposed on political action committees are too onerous for groups that engage in independent political expenditures. And I have to say that I think this opinion, you know, it leaves some room for those kinds of challenges because it has some negative things to say about the so-called burdens of PACs. The positive aspect of it is that, in general, it seems to be a pretty strong endorsement of disclosure and disclaimer requirements as potentially applicable to any form of electioneering speech. So the issue, I think, is going to come down to whether people challenging these requirements are going to be able to make a case of excessive burden.
Thank you.
Scott, this is Peter Marriott from the Bill Moyers Journal. Following up on that, though, how effective are these disclosure requirements? Is it not true that Exxon or another corporation could just funnel their money through the chamber or another third party and then never have to disclose that their source of the money?
Well, I think that's a potential weakness because if the contribution is not earmarked for a particular expenditure, and for example, suppose Exxon simply, you know, gives the chamber X million dollars, and then the chamber uses its general treasury funds to finance some electioneering communication. I think that there would be, a question whether the sources of the chamber's funds would be subject to disclosure. So, yes, there are weaknesses in the current disclosure regime that I think this opinion may exacerbate by allowing sort of each corporation to use its treasury funds in an unlimited manner, and then if you sort of go start laundering money through one corporation after another, it'll be very difficult to sort of pick up where it's ultimately coming from.
This is Tom Clamer with KKFI Tell Somebody. Could you give a brief comment on the activist nature of how this case was expanded by a supposedly conservative court majority?
Well, I'll take that on, Rob, if you don't mind. What happened in this case was that Citizens United originally filed a number of narrow so-called as-applied challenges, saying that the restrictions on expenditures couldn't be applied to them because they're mostly a nonprofit. They accept only a little bit of money from for-profit corporations, and because what they claimed were the distinctive features of the on-demand video service through which they intended to disseminate their movie it shouldn't be subject to the law, and also that a full-length movie should not be considered the same as a political advertisement. Those were the kinds of claims that they made, and once the case had been fully briefed in the Supreme Court on that basis, the court itself, on its own initiative, asked the parties to address the very broad question whether its prior precedents should be overruled in such a way that the law would be, as it now is this morning, that all corporations, including for-profit corporations, have an unlimited right to engage in political advertising. As Justice Stevens, points out in detail in his dissenting opinion, that's quite contrary to the way the court usually proceeds in addressing constitutional challenges, and really is contrary to the notion that a conservative court should be approaching with caution, upsetting precedents, and making expansive constitutional rulings.
I think that this procedural issue just highlights how far-reaching and radical the court's effort was in Citizens United. To read the dissent is to see it both as to regard the process by which the court reached out, as Scott just described, their refusal to consider narrower bases, which would have been more appropriate for deciding the case, apart from deciding it against Citizens United, and then their just diving in to an expansive creation of rights for artificial entities known as corporations without any regard for the purpose of the First Amendment, the history of the First Amendment, besides some throwaway lines that Stevens really devastates in his dissent, not describing the historical jurisprudence of the Supreme Court. We're ready for the next question.
This is Alden Hines from Orient Lodge, and I'm wondering if people can speak a little bit more about the shareholder accountability fix. Is there currently legislation being considered? If so, what is the bill? And are there any considerations to the issues that have been brought up of this indirect donation, such as from Exxon to the Chamber of Commerce?
Lisa, you want to go ahead?
Well, certainly language has been drafted, but there is no bill currently introduced. It's what we think is a smart reaction, making sure that shareholders approve whatever political expenditures are being made with their money. If corporations are to be deemed persons, then the shareholders are the people who are making it so. And then certainly, others addressed earlier that there is this possible way that corporations can move money through other avenues, but we still think this is a very smart fix to the decision of the court today.
I think also it's not one that can – the shareholder approach can encompass this problem of laundering money so long as it defines what must be voted upon by shareholders properly. I think we'll be okay on that one.
Yeah.
So
how much you'll be spending on your push for a constitutional amendment, and perhaps any members you think might be sympathetic?
This is John Boniface. I can answer in terms of the members. We've already been approaching some members of Congress on this, and Congresswoman Donna Edwards, as I said, has indicated she's already on board, and she's featured in our campaign video at freespeechforpeople.org. We anticipate there will be others that will be joining very soon to say as well that we need to add this in terms of the solution to how to address this ruling. I can't address the kind of money that's available to this. There's still fundraising to be done to help further this campaign. But I can say that this will be a broad-based grassroots effort, and I think it's critical that we engage in reframing this whole debate and challenge the basic question of whether corporations should be treated as persons under the First Amendment with free speech rights.
And I'll just add from Public Citizen, it's exactly right. This is going to be a very broad effort. It's going to be a long-term effort. We do not take lightly the idea of calling for constitutional amendment. It requires a level of seriousness and commitment that we organizationally are ready to bring to the challenge. We expect that this issue is going to catch fire because the Supreme Court's decision, as a matter of jurisprudence, is so outrageous, but because it will relate very much to people's basic understandings of how our political process works. To read the court's decision is to think that they just don't know anything about how politics takes place in the United States. People are going to understand that disconnect, and they're going to want to have a remedy that is appropriate and robust, and I don't think that there is broad support in the United States for the idea that Exxon and DuPont should be able to spend whatever they want and by invoking the First Amendment to affect election outcomes. And we're quite confident this is going to have very broad support going forward over the long term. And what happens in Congress will happen. We ultimately, it has to be brought through Congress, of course, but that's not the first step for us.
Is that Fred speaking?
Whatever your view is.
That's Robert Weissman, a public citizen.
Hi, this is Arthur Delaney from the Huffington Post. What types of candidates would benefit from this decision?
This is John Bonifaz. I'll answer that. I mean, I think candidates who are going to be backed by corporations will clearly benefit by this decision. Candidates who take on corporate America will face the danger of having general treasury funds from corporations be spent in their campaigns to try to defeat them if they're already an incumbent or if they're challenging an incumbent. And this will dramatically change the landscape of our politics and further dilute the basic ordinary citizen voices in our politics that are found out by money today. So this will be an incredibly dramatic shift toward corporations controlling our democracy.
This is Robert Weissman. I think that's exactly right. I think you can forget red state, blue state. You can forget Democrat, Republican. The key question is going to be pro-corporate or not. And it's going to chill legislators and executive officials from taking positions that are or potentially may offend corporate interests generally. It is going to especially chill them from taking on particular corporate interests. So if you're going to go after some permit, you want to deny a permit that's going to harm the interest of a mining company, and you know that mining company may come back and throw $1 million into your local or state race, you're just not going to do it. So I think we're going to see a lot of very particular decisions go badly, and we're going to see a very broad chilling effect. It's going to affect the kind of person who wants to enter into politics. It's going to affect the way people who do enter into politics behave. This is going to have very fundamental effects on our democracy.
What about between the two main parties?
How would it impact the two main parties?
Yeah.
I mean, I think to the extent that there are elements within those parties that are catering to big corporate support, then they'll gain. And the elements within those parties that are engaged at whatever level of challenging corporate America will suffer. And ordinary citizen voices will suffer as a result. But I do want to just add to what Rob said. This is John Bonifaz again, which is that not only is this obviously going to impact politics in Washington and the debate in Washington, but it impacts politics throughout our country. This decision applies, of course, as being a Supreme Court, interpreting the U.S. Constitution, supreme law of the land. It applies to every single election around the country at the local, state, and federal level. And so we're going to see corporate spending going up to the sky throughout the process, not just in federal elections.
And I would add, this is Scott Nelson, from a lawyer's perspective, maybe this is more significant to me than it may appear to some others, but we shouldn't forget that in many states, judges, including Supreme Court justices, are elected. And we've already seen in the past corporate groups targeting judicial candidates whose decisions they disagree with, and I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And in those kinds of elections, where typically they have not in the past been ones where the candidates themselves can generate large amounts of contributions, a little corporate money can go a long way toward distorting the outcome.
Nicole Sandler from Air America Radio.
In terms of the constitutional amendment, I've got a multi-parted question here. Will the push for this amendment start immediately? And what are you looking for? What would this amendment say? And for those people, obviously a lot of people who haven't been involved in the process before will begin, I hope, to be interested. Can you spell out what the steps are necessary to get a constitutional amendment?
This is John Bonifaz. The push for an amendment started moments after this ruling was issued. Obviously, we had hoped that the ruling would not overturn a key precedent that has prohibited for so long corporations spending their general treasury funds in our elections. But knowing that that was a possibility, we were prepared to launch it, and we did that moments after this ruling at freespeechforpeople.org with this coalition that I referenced before, Voter Action, Public Citizen, Center for Corporate Policy, and the American Independent Business Alliance. The campaign video that's included on that website is being pushed out as well today and includes, as I said, Congresswoman Donna Edwards. But we are actively reaching out to other members of Congress, both Senate and House, to urge them to join this call for a constitutional amendment. In terms of where the grassroots push will be, obviously we see this as something that must be people-centered and focused around the country, and there are many ways people can get engaged, to contact their members of Congress, to organize themselves at the local level, to organize public education events, to get people to understand what this means to our democracy, to our right to vote, and to our politics overall. And so we will be actively engaged in all those efforts and many more, as highlighted at freespeechforpeople.org.
Right, but do you have wording for the...
We have draft language on that site. I know that there will be, as part of our coalition, other versions of this that will be made available. But there is draft language to give people an idea of what an amendment would look like on our site.
And
Carla, this is Rob.
Hi, Rob.
I think the core idea is that for-profit corporations should not be able to claim First Amendment rights except for the right freedom of the press. And there's different ways to frame that, and the different kinds of language make quite a bit of difference around the edges, but that's the central idea. To do it right, you really do want to have a real and robust conversation. I think John and we and others, really a serious conversation among legal scholars and law schools and among experts across the country to debate and thrash out the best way to do it, and that'll be part of the educational process. As for the way forward, I mean, the same provision of the Constitution has a petition clause, and the basics of democracy is you petition the government to do things differently, and I think politically, the way to move on a constitutional amendment is to show that there really is broad public support for the idea. So we and John and others have launched a petition around the idea of an amendment clarifying that corporations don't have First Amendment rights, and people can find that at getroll.org, citizen.org, or the sites that John mentioned.
And I'll say, in terms of steps on the way to an amendment, so some of these other reforms that will be more short-term and which we're working on with leadership will certainly draw attention to the decision today and then also help us demonstrate the support we have for change in the campaign finance arena in general.
This is Andrea Sears at WBAI. Won't the corporations unleash their full financial might in their opposition to a constitutional amendment, and how would you counter that?
This is John Bonifaz. They will certainly unleash their corporate funding and their might against the constitutional amendment, but, we've seen in our nation's history amendment process be critical for overturning egregiously wrong decisions of the Supreme Court impacting our democracy, despite the kind of forces that were there to try to stop it. And I think that this is another one of those critical moments in our nation's history where we have to step forward and make clear that the First Amendment is for people, not corporations, and that our Constitution is designed to protect people, not corporations. And I think it's fundamental that we engage in this fight to protect our democracy and our right to vote.
I think your question, this is Robert Weissman, you know, it highlights the reality that we ought to make sure we introduce into the conversation, which is that, of course, corporations already have a extraordinary role in the policymaking process, and an improper role in the policymaking process in Washington, D.C., and in state capitals, and and city halls around the country. So we're really talking about things getting qualitatively worse from a very bad baseline. And it is a, not quite a paradox, but certainly an extra challenge for us that the rights that the Supreme Court now gives to corporations will make it that much harder for us to achieve the kinds of reforms that we're advancing, both legislatively and through the constitutional amendment process. But exactly as John says, you know, the best part of our history is the people overcoming concentrated interests to hold on to narrow self-interest at the expense of the greatest features of American democracy, and that's our challenge again today.
Tom Clamer, KKFI, tell somebody. Any thoughts with journalism already in crisis in this country on the direct and indirect impacts of the campaign spending that goes to advertising in campaigns and how that will affect media in this country?
I guess it's going to help some local TV stations. Certainly Massachusetts media did pretty well in the last couple of weeks. I don't know if anyone has any comments on that. I guess we have nothing more to say on that. I would say that the issue of media corporations has a different tradition in First Amendment jurisprudence. It has a different relationship to the origin of the First Amendment and really isn't at stake in the Citizens United decision or in our response to it.
Well, if I could tweak that question just a little bit, do you think all this corporate spending to local TV stations will further distort media coverage to a corporate point of view?
I can't say that I see that. I mean, I think you could be as hard-hitting an investigative local reporter as you want, and if you've got audience, the corporations have the same incentive to get on your show. I mean, perhaps there'll be some pressure from advertisers, as we sometimes see, but will it be qualitatively different because of this decision? I think that's a little bit hard to see.
This is Meg White with BuzzFlash.com. I'm wondering if someone can address the timing, this being an election year. You know, how quickly are we going to see evidence of this sort of spending? And then, again, how quickly do you think you can get these changes into place in regards to that 2010 election?
Scott, maybe you can take a first cut, and Lisa, if you want to follow up.
Well, just in terms of the effect of the decision, it's really immediate, so that you know, starting today, corporations can feel free to run political advertising that expressly advocates the election or defeat of candidates, so that you know, the timing of this decision is probably coinciding with the, you know, the beginning of primary activity in a number of states, especially ones that have early primaries. So it's really going to reflect the entirety of this political cycle. Of course, you know, the time in which it would take to put a constitutional amendment in place is usually measured in years. So that's not a realistic fix that is going to be in place for this cycle. And similarly, I think putting in place a public financing regime, it you know, campaigns are already underway. I think that's something that in the best case scenario would probably be affecting later election cycles as well.
I'm sorry, who was that speaking there?
Scott Nelson.
And then I'll add that certainly passing something quickly that's a fix to the Citizens United decision is a huge priority of leadership in both houses and the White House, and so that's why we're working with them right now, figuring out what that should be. Certainly we're figuring out what has the best chance of passing, and so something like the shareholder accountability fix is a definite possibility. but we're just still reading the opinion and figuring out if there's other ways to reinstitute portions of the corporate ban as well.
We have time for a few more questions, if there are any. Well, if not, we can stop there. We've reached our appointed end. Thank you all very much. You will be hearing from us in the weeks and months ahead.